Okay. Are you still with me?
Yes, I am.
Going on the air now.
We're on the air. We're live on the air. We'll just cancel that for later.
Huh?
We'll just talk about that later.
Okay.
Hi, everybody. And away we go with another edition of the Stampede Wrestling Show.
And indeed, away we go. And obviously, our guests are getting a little excited and ahead of everything. Welcome in once again to Heartbeat Radio with Bruce Hart here on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio on Blog Talk Radio. I'm one of the hosts. I'm Patrick Ketza, and hopefully Bruce will be able to join us very shortly. We've got a jam-packed house already tonight, though, and I want to make sure that we get everybody situated and introduced and got some great stars from the 60s and 70s and even into the 80s with joining us tonight. And our first guest, he's going through some medical issues, and we just wanted to make sure that we got his opinion on some of the different ideas going through in the 60s and 70s compared to now in Mr. Bob Kelly. Bob, how are you this evening?
Well, I'm doing well as can be expected, I reckon, under the circumstances. You know, I just got diagnosed with having lung cancer, and I haven't had any treatments or nothing yet. They haven't really diagnosed what kind it is. They just been running a bunch of tests and things, and I'll hang on here with you guys as long as I can. I get a fluid build up, and it makes me short of breath, and I couldn't get it drained today, so it's built up on me a little bit, and I won't get it off till tomorrow. But you know, I can talk as long as I can, and whatever you guys want to know, you know, just let me know. I know Bill and I know Bruce, and I don't know who else is on, but Bill worked for me in Mobile when I was booking for Lee, and I met Bruce through the Cauliflower Alley. But anyways, what do you guys want to talk about?
Well, real quick, if I may interrupt, I just want to make sure all of our guests are introduced. Also joining us, a friend of the show and someone who's been on and someone who would definitely know about the different 60s and 70s era with wrestling, Mr. Merv Unger. Merv, how are you this evening?
Not too bad at all. I'm looking forward to the next 2 hours.
Indeed, it should be a very good one. And someone else joining us, Mr. Bill White. Bill, how are you this evening?
Better than I deserve.
And then also Mr. Tom Andrews. Tom, how are you doing this evening too?
Oh, I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm not doing 100%. I'm actually sitting here in a cast, but that's a story for a different day.
Hey, Tom, now, how you doing, man? I forgot. They told me you was going to be on, but I forgot about it. But how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty good for an old fella.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been rough on me the last couple weeks.
I didn't catch that.
I just said it's been a little rough on me a couple weeks. They've been running tests and scans and trying to figure out what they got to do to help me, so I don't have any real answers of what is actually going on. They just did say that I had lung cancer, and they were trying to figure out what kind it was and what they were going to do to treat it.
Yeah, boy, I hate to hear that. I wish you a speedy recovery and hope they can pinpoint it and take care of the problem.
Well, thank you, Tom. You know, I was just telling him I knew Bruce through CAC, and I knew Bill. I worked with him and when I was booking for Lee, and the same with you here in Mobile. You worked for me here in Mobile, and you know what a ride I had in the business. I came out of Louisville, Kentucky, and went to my first road trip. I was actually trained by Wee Willie Davis and Doug Kinslow in Louisville, and my first road trip was North Bay, and I went to North Bay and up there for Larry Kazabowski and met George Jr. and Matt Gilmore and Vic Rosentanny and Big John, and I don't remember exactly who all was up there at that time, then I went from there when the territory closed for the winter. Terry Garvin and Ronnie Garvin was up there, and they were coming to Mobile, and they got me booked in Mobile. And when I got to Mobile with Lee Fields, I never left his territory, and I started out with him, you know, refereeing and putting up the rings and stuff, and wound up booking the territory for him for over 10 years. So I had a real ride. I was really a success here, and that's about, you know, I didn't make a lot. I did get a chance to work, you know, for Eddie Graham and a little bit, a couple of weeks or 3 weeks, something like that, and they got us booked over in Bahama Islands and Puerto Rico and stuff like that, and I'd switch out sometime to go to Tennessee and different places, but most of my whole career was right here in Mobile.
Well, it sounds like you had a good career there.
Well, I did, and I had a, you know, just lucky, I guess. I got here at the right time, and just I guess I was a good listener and paid attention to what was going on when I was going to the matches and buying a ticket, and I remembered a lot of stuff that those guys did, and matter of fact, Bruiser and Wilbur Snyder and that bunch is who I really got started with, because they were on top and everything here in Louisville. And Jim Barnett was promoting it at the beginning, and then Bruiser took it over, and then of course Jarrett took it over after that, and I was out of it by then. But it was quite a I had quite a ride, and I enjoyed every minute of it, and I met so many people through the Cauliflower Alley too that I hadn't got to meet. I saw them, you know, bought tickets to see some of them wrestle and stuff, and then I had a heck of a deal and got along with the Fields boys. I never had a word. Bit of problem with them guys, and like I said, I started out here in 1965 with Lee, and I'm still down here in Mobile. Of course, he bought the Speedway down here, and his wife Ida, she still runs it for him, and I still stay in contact with his kids and all the grandkids, and I'm still part of the Fields family.
Who's supposed to take my show? Who's supposed to take my call?
I still can't hear you.
I'm actually having trouble hearing too.
Oh, okay.
I didn't catch what you said.
About what? If you don't catch me quick, I'll forget what I said.
No, it doesn't matter. I just it's been good out of the CAC the last, I don't know how many years, but to see Bruce Hart, and, you know, he remembers me. He was kind of a little boy when I was up there back in the 60s. And,
Somebody cut off.
When you guys get ready to talk to me, let me know, would you please?
If you want to chime in with a question at any point,
just go ahead and talk. I can listen better than I can talk.
maybe this. You can listen to this. Hello.
I can hear you now. I can definitely hear you now.
Wrestling fan. Are you ready?
You can't hear it, can you?
Sit back and relax. It's time for the most exciting hour on television, All Star Wrestling. Did you get any of that?
Tom, are you still hanging out there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay.
All right, I think we just had one caller drop. I know Tom dropped accidentally.
What are you into now, Tom?
Well, right now I'm not really into nothing. Like I said, I just got diagnosed with having lung cancer, and I'm having trouble. But I'm still,
I lost my service, and I had to come back in. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're here with us now, Tom.
I was talking, it was good to see Bruce out there the last, I don't know how many years of CAC, and I was just going to say, when I was in Calgary, we had a lot of talent up there. There was Rocky Johnson, Sweet Daddy Siki, Stan Stasiak, Camille Dupre, of course, Dave Rule, John Fody, Johnny Costas, Eric the Great, Jungle Jim, Cowboy Bruce Kirk, Eric Froelich, and, of course, like I said, Bruce's dad got his tights on once in a while and wrestled with us.
Yeah.
Well, I love the big tiger like a tiger, and, yeah. It was fantastic.
Hey, kid, why don't you come on down to the dungeon and I'll show you something.
Yeah, he did me. I was on the mat with Eamon, and I knew what he was trying to do, and I told him, I says, you're not going to get it. And all of a sudden, he gave me the stubble treatment with his beard in my eye. And my hand came up and bang, he had it. And he played with it, too. He didn't just hold it for a minute. He'd release it when I'd start coming to, and then he'd latch on again.
Cinch it up again.
Yeah.
Can't take it, kid.
See, I'm interested because honestly, it's one of the things that we haven't really talked about a lot on this show, is indeed Bruce's father, obviously Stu Hart. Does anybody else here actually have a story of going down into the dungeon and being stretched by him, or do we only have the one?
No, I never did that. I met Bruce. I mean Stu at the CAC and. I met all the Harts at CAC. I never worked with any of them on the road or nothing.
I think just about everybody who came into the territory got taken down into the dungeon before they ever really started in the business on the prairies, because I remember we had an Olympic weightlifter or wrestler come in, a real big boy, and Stu decided to take him on the mat, and the young fellow knew pretty soon that Stu was the boss, and he always would be.
Yeah, I've heard that. I mean, I've heard the stories and everything, but I never actually experienced any of it myself.
Neither have I.
I guess you're lucky.
Never had the privilege of being up there with Stu.
Not to say that I didn't get my nose rubbed. I'm not saying I never got my nose rubbed in the mat. Lee Fields was pretty good himself, and Wee Willie Davis wasn't a slouch, and I worked out with Bill Miller, and I had some pretty good teachers too, really, in my bit. I don't know if anybody ever remembers Charlie Carr or not, but Charlie Carr was a pretty good guy on the mat. And I got my nose rubbed in the mat a few times. Most of us did back in those days.
Amen. Amen.
Sounds like
how can I help you? Doctor on this phone, how can I help you? I like to be exciting talking to the wrestling fans, and what can I do to help?
Yeah, we're having some trouble communicating with some of these phones. Now, obviously, the theme of today's show is supposed to be, you know, 60s and 70s wrestling, and I'm actually rather surprised that Bruce isn't here yet. So hopefully, you know, he'll be able to take over the conversation from awkward old me, you know, whenever he does, whenever he is able to join us. Now, do any of you gentlemen, like, follow even somewhat today's wrestling?
I do. This is Merv in Canada. I do follow it, but it just isn't the same product. But no matter how you slice it or dice it, it just does not come out the same. And just yesterday, looking through some of my old materials, I came across a bunch of black and white photos of some ring action, and Ox Baker was in those photos where I was refereeing one of his matches. And so when you look back there and all the guys, and Ox must have very nearly got his start in Calgary, because he didn't have the mustache or mutton chops at that time. And I do remember Tom, and remembered him all the years, but when I went to the CAC, I never put two and two together, and I saw him there, but it never rang a bell until I came home, and oh boy, that was the guy I wanted to talk to.
Hello.
Are you there with us?
This is Bill Kirsten.
Yeah.
This is Bill Kirsten.
Now,
I told the call on the savings
show. Since you did bring it up, you mentioned that, you know, obviously today is different. Can any of you maybe provide a little insight in as to, like, what the difference would be from today compared to the 60s or 70s? Obviously, you know, things we've talked about in the past is, you know, the transportation and the fact that everybody flies now rather than drives together. But as far as, like, an in-ring product, I know a lot of people consider it more of a cartoony style today, and especially the 90s. But could any of you gentlemen provide some insight as to, like, where the real main differences are between today and yesteryear's wrestling?
Yeah, in yesteryear, back in the 50s and 70s and 80s when I was wrestling, it was more psychology, more ring savvy, knowing your opponent as well as you do, because you get to wrestle them a lot more than they do now. You get the feel of the audience, and you feel what the audience wants to see, and then you attack your opponent in that manner.
And in that era, it was, there was real wrestling involved, putting on holds and working holds, and sometimes a hold could go for quite a while, but it was still interesting because the workers in those days knew how to make it work, and what we see on TV nowadays is too much, you know, flashy costumes, and they'll come out for a 10-minute mic job and stand there and talk, and actually never really start wrestling, and that was the big difference. Very, very seldom do I recall that anybody ever grabbed a microphone and went into the ring, even if they were trying to set up something for future matches. That was always done by the interview process beside the ring or the TV announcer, and they would set them up that way. But nowadays, it's all flash. I keep looking back, and it really strikes me still to this day is when I see Butcher Vachon's books, series of them, and the title is When Wrestling Was Real. And to me, that really is what it was in those days. It was real to everybody.
I'd like to say one thing about it. After I split up with my wrestling team, the interns, I wrestled in Kansas City as a super intern, and I had a match in Des Moines, Iowa, with the then champion Terry Funk, and it was 2 out of 3 fall, 1 hour time limit, and we wrestled for the whole hour. And with a fall apiece, and the last 30 minutes of the match, everybody in the arena was on their feet, but the first punch was thrown in the match at 5 minutes to go. And it was all wrestling, you know, and the people were, I mean, we did high spots, but it was all wrestling and holds and getting out of them, and the people were so excited. They were on their feet for the last half of the match. So it has changed a lot since then.
It definitely has changed because I can remember when I was wrestling and the promoters would tell me, you go out there and at least the first 5 to 7 minutes of your match, you better be wrestling or you're fired.
Oh.
I've had many a guys come back and say, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to wear me out?
Hey, Patrick.
Yes.
Yes, Bob Brooks here. Tom Andrews, are you out there?
Tom,
are you here?
Tom Andrews?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Tom, this is your an old friend of yours from Classic Professional Wrestling, Bob Brooks.
I didn't catch what you asked me.
Tom, this is Bob Brooks. Remember from Classic Professional Wrestling?
Oh yeah.
I didn't make it to CAC this year.
I don't know. It's gone beyond me how they do things now in the wrestling business. But they're entertaining. They're good athletes, and you know. But I think maybe steroids have kind of taken over a lot of them.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's another denominator in there that Tom hasn't mentioned, I don't think yet. But he had one of the all-time great managers for his team, and that was Dr. Ken Ramey.
Oh, yeah, he was great. We could walk out to the ring, and he had heat without doing anything, just walking out.
Yeah, well, Tom, you know, you were on my show last year, and we had talked about Dr. Ken, and, you know, I had talked to him. I'm hoping that the 50th, we'll see Dr. Ken Ramey out there. But, you know, the question, I think, Patrick, that you brought up earlier, you said what was one of the main differences, and I'd like to say that that was one of the main differences. The managers back then, they did most of the talking versus the wrestlers. You know, and I don't know who told all these guys today that they can talk, but you had guys back then, whether it was Bobby Heenan, Dr. Ken Ramey, J.C. Dykes with the Infernos, Don Carson with the Grapplers, you know, all these managers who could, you know, go out there and talk. And they were serious, and they were taken serious, you know.
When we were teamed up, we never talked. We did not talk on TV at all. Just our manager, Dr. Ken Ramey, he did all the talking.
Right. So obviously managers are, you know, one of the big differences between today. I mean, obviously, you know, if you look at wrestling now, there's really only two managers in Paul Heyman and Zeb Coulter, Dirty Dutch Mantel, depending on who you ask. And it seems like wrestlers now are just thrown to, how am I going to put this? They're thrown to managers, like, in case they have nothing for them, instead of trying to have the manager bring them up, to me it seems, at least. And, of course, I'm only speaking as a 22, almost 23-year-old wrestling fan. I'm not, you know, I do not have the time in the business that you gentlemen have, but that's just how it seems to me, is that rather than trying to have a manager bring the wrestler up, they're just thrown to the manager if creative has nothing for them.
Well, I think the name of the game is all about selling tickets to the events. And I have seen many very, very good wrestlers over the years who couldn't say their name into a microphone if their life depended on it, so they couldn't do it. And that's where the role of the manager came in. You could have a very good worker who couldn't talk, but if you brought in a manager who was really good at his job, he could be selling tickets like crazy, and very, very seldom would he go into the ring himself. And I think that was the original role, likely, for the managers, is to have somebody who's the mouthpiece for the business. And there were some very good ones that you've already mentioned.
Patrick, can I chime in on that there?
Absolutely. You don't have to ask my opinion. Go right ahead.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go. You know, Tom, you know, he always hit his age real well with the math, you know, but I'm going to go back a few years before his time. You know, as a matter of fact, I was just watching some videos today with Gorgeous George and talking about, Cherie. And, you know, you look back at Bobby Davis and managers like that. Some of them, you know, they had valets before they had managers. And then before that, they had attendants. If you guys recall, like when you were in L.A., places like that, they had ring attendants who really weren't managers. They walked out there with the wrestlers and then just more or less took their, you know, their gear back to the dressing room and that kind of thing. So it has evolved, you know, but I don't, and this is only my opinion, guys, but I, like I said, I promoted in Chicago for years, I just see it as a downhill slide today. But the managers, like I say, of those days were, you know, one of the big influences. And fellas, I just wanted to throw this in real quick. You mentioned Ox Baker, and if I can plug this for a little bit, Patrick, Ox Baker will be coming into St. Louis area in the Metro East. He'll be in East Carondelet, Illinois, for Southern Illinois Championship Wrestling. A good friend of mine, promoter, will be out there, Herb Simmons, and Ox Baker's actually going to be there on their next show coming up in East Carondelet. So he's going to make it out. I know Ted DiBiase was just out there, and so he's bringing in a lot of the classic fellows, you know, coming into the area. So it'll be good to see them, and you know. But I mean, to me, there was a lot of differences, you know. And these fellows like Tom and everybody. I mean, you know, you guys were actually in the ring. I mean, even the promoters and Patrick, if we could go go back to that, what we were talking about with the interviews. Look at the people that are interviewing today, like when they go back and they show the locker room and so forth. You know, you don't even know who the girl is that they're talking about. You go back to Sam Menneker, Gordon Solie, you know, announcers like that. Those guys, you know, they were professionals. They came into your home every week. Promoter Bob Luce from Chicago, Fred Kohler back in the 50s and 60s. You know, they were people that you knew every week, not somebody who changed out every week. These were people, you know, that you knew, and the fans knew, and the wrestlers knew, and they were comfortable with them, you know. So Marty O'Neill, you know, from Minneapolis, and Roger Kent, you know, so many names back there, Rod Trungard, and, you know, all these guys. So I think that's a big difference, too, you know. It was a comfortable setting. You knew when you turned wrestling on, you knew kind of, you know what I'm saying, these were friends. These were people that you knew every week.
Absolutely, because like you said, you know, they're – and even these are, you know, names that, especially because I'm from Chicago myself, so you're from my neck of the woods, and one of the main names that I've always heard is the name Bob Luce, so.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
well, I'll tell you what, if you get over to Miller's Pub in Chicago, you'll see a lot of wrestling photos down there, so go down there, and you'll see the photos of Dick the Bruiser and UConn Moose Cholak, Wilbur Snyder, Pepper Gomez, all the guys, you know, from the WWA and AWA. I'm sorry, Pat. Didn't mean to cut you off there.
Oh, no.
Yeah, me and Gene Oakland got a start in the Minneapolis area, did all the network interviewing for Vern Gagne's operations in the AWA, and that was in the 1970s.
And you were over at that time?
He was asking if you were up there at that time as well.
Yeah, had he gotten up in the Minneapolis area?
Was that question for me?
I heard you. Yeah,
yes,
absolutely.
Was.
He was asking. Go right ahead, Bob. Ask it one more time.
Okay, I was just asking, had you gotten around the Minneapolis area with, you know, Wally Carbo and those guys back in the 70s?
Oh, yes, I was running the Winnipeg operation at the time for Vern and Wally, and Wally came up. We had shows once a month in Winnipeg, and Wally was at all of them. So, no, he was another one of the really outstanding characters of the business.
Whatever happened to Dennis Hilgard from Milwaukee?
That name rings a bell, but I don't have any idea what finally happened.
I know he was working the Milwaukee area, know, in the 70s, and I was just wondering if anybody had a clue as to what happened to him. And I believe, and I have to check this, but in the original movie, The Wrestler, that came out in 73, that I believe he was in that, because I remember seeing the credits for that. But I thought maybe you might know. How about, Patrick, if you don't mind, I was just going to remember we had thrown a question out last week about Richard Walker. Does that name ring a bell to you? The midget wrestler from Canada and wrestled in Detroit quite a bit?
What name did he wrestle under, do you remember? Because the midget guy had...
You know what? I'd have to look back. He was in the... going back to one of the wrestling videos, I like to hurt people. He's actually in one of the matches there, so I'd have to check that. But I know his real name was Richard Walker, and his ring name eludes me right now. I apologize, but I was just wondering if you were aware of him.
I might be, but not under his own name.
Okay.
Real quick, while we have a moment, I know we have an extra caller. If the 618 area code, the other one, not you, Bob, could introduce themselves.
This is Ballistic Brent Myers out of Chicago, Illinois.
How
you guys
doing
this evening? I'm not too bad. I'm going to
Did you have
I'm
a question for
anybody? Oh, go ahead. Yeah, I'm going to throw this...
I'm going to throw this question out there for Bob Kelly. Probably Bob Kelly. I'm going to ask him. You know what? Probably a lot of people would want to know. How does he see himself, or does he see himself, anything like Cowboy Bob Orton Sr. or Jr.? Are there any similarities that he finds himself to have, or is it, you know, is he a bit different?
Are you asking me a question about that?
Yes, sir.
All right, what was the question?
Okay, the question is, with all due respect, do you find any similarities with yourself in comparison to Cowboy Bob Orton, Senior or Junior? Do you find yourself to be anything like them in the past? Or are you a lot different? You know, I've heard other people ask that before. You know, I was wondering myself.
Well, really, I never worked with Bob Orton or Junior or Senior, either one, and I never worked with any other cowboys, really. The wrestler that I tried to copy after was my favorite when I was growing up was Cowboy Bob Ellis. And,
yeah. Oh boy.
So I kind of stole his gimmick and. And he was my hero, and I really never got to work with him. I booked him in here, you know, and he'd already got his ways changed, and he didn't want a baby face, and he just wanted to come in and work heel, and it kind of broke my heart. But anyways, that's a different story, but. He was my favorite, and he's the one that I tried to copy myself after.
I see. So we finally got to the bottom of that.
yeah, and that bulldog, you know, I took that and used that, and almost every match that I ever won after I got a working main event was a bulldog hold. Nobody ever kicked out of that bulldog hole.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be on the wrong end of that one.
I can vouch for that.
No, he was quite a guy. I thought, you know, you know, when I was a kid, my mom took me to the wrestling matches when I was a kid, and I've seen a lot of wrestling and a lot of angles and a lot of stuff and I just enjoyed every bit of it, but that's how I got started in that is of course I was I when I was in the service I rode bulls in the rodeos, and so I kind of had a cowboy gimmick to start with, but I put on the cut off Levi's and the vest and things and boots like Bob Ellis, whenever I started getting on top here in Mobile.
Right on. Interesting. Very interesting.
Any more questions, Brent?
No, I mean, that was the one. I won't take too much airtime from you guys, but it is a pleasure to be on here, and I'm glad to hear from you, Kelly, and I hope the best for you.
Yeah, okay. I appreciate it, too. I'm going to be kind of signing off here myself pretty soon, but I'll hang on here and listen as much as I can. Anybody got any questions for me, just try me, and maybe I'm still here.
All righty. Well, thank you very much, Brent, for the call and for the question for
Absolutely.
Mr. Kelly. All right, we'll see you next week, probably.
This is Tom Andrews talking. I'd like to say a couple of stories about Bob Ellis. He was
by all means.
Cowboy Bob Ellis. I had a few matches, blow-off matches with him in Omaha when I was wrestling as the Claw, and I got to know him. And I was with him over in Puerto Rico, and he wore a cowboy hat all the time, and I kept telling him, I'm going to steal that hat from you. And he said, no, you're not, boy, that's my hat. And when we left at the airport, he walked out, when we left Puerto Rico, he walked out, and he had his arm behind his back, and he stuck it on my head, and I've still got it today. I've got it hanging up.
So you have an official Cowboy Bob Ellis cowboy hat?
Yes, I do. Yep.
Wow.
Now, my question is, was it worth the beating to get it?
Listen, in Omaha, I beat him.
Well, I
retained my title there. You know, I was a heavyweight champion as the claw. And the only trouble was that we didn't have a belt there. It was a great big trophy about 5 feet tall. And I had to carry it to and from the ring every night. And most of the time I had to fight my way out of the ring carrying that big old trophy.
Hey, Tom, this is Bob Brooks here. I was wondering if Patrick will allow with time here. Could you maybe talk just a little bit about the, like you told me before, about the transition with the medics and the interns?
Well, see, in some, like Puerto Rico or Japan or places like that, they call us medics, and of course here in the United States they call us interns, except in Florida, before I joined the team, they were medics in Florida.
Okay,
so it was a different gimmick for different territories, pretty much.
Yeah.
And Tony Gonzalez was probably the original medic, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. And I can't remember his partner's name, but they were original medics in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I worked with Tony a lot.
Yeah, he was a nice guy.
Yes, sir.
The other one was he died over in Japan.
Don Lardy. Don Lardy was the other medic.
Yeah, well, he had another one with him after he died, and I can't think of his name, but he was a Latin, you know, Mexican, and he was a heck of a guy.
Now, Tom, when you went in, when you got the call, I remember the story that you told me that when you transitioned over from being, you know, the claw into the interns and. You got that call from Dr. Ken Ramey, you know, and you went back in the ring with the, you know, wearing a mask, and you were behind a mask for several years. That was your transition. But where was that in Texas when you got that call? You were working somewhere out west, weren't you?
I was in Omaha, and Ox Baker was my tag team partner at that time. What happened, I broke my leg in Omaha, and they brought Ox Baker in, and I managed him for a little while, for about 4 weeks while my leg healed, and I wrestled a boy, I hate to say it, but I was talking about him on about a main event on Monday night TV, and they had put him in the hospital, and of course they said, you know, the claw put another man in the hospital. Well, he died the next day, and it was terrible. I didn't kill him. He had a bad pancreas, and it burst on him, and by the time they found out what it was, that the poison had spread through his body, and he passed away.
It was just bad timing there.
That's going to be tough.
But I... And I had to leave because I had a lot of heat, but it was all the wrong kind of heat, you know. I was a murderer to the fans. So, and it, just by luck, Ken Ramey called me, and I didn't know him, but he introduced himself on the phone, and he asked me if I wanted to join the team, and I said, yeah, when can I leave, you know. So...
And Tom, you had a you,
so
when you came in. Oh, I'm sorry, Pat. Go ahead.
No, I was saying it was pretty much good timing on your part because as soon as you were trying to get out of one, you ended up in another.
Yeah, that's true.
Like I said, I kind of apologize because I wasn't expecting to be talking this much, but unfortunately, I guess. Bruce won't be joining us tonight, so I do want to apologize to you gentlemen. Like I said, I wasn't exactly fully prepared for this.
Well, I think you're doing a fine job.
Well, thank you very much. I'm gonna try my best here. Now, if we could switch gears, you know, because like I said, I'm you know, obviously being a younger fan, obviously I'm more of a modern wrestling fan, and obviously, you know, I'm always interested to learn. Now, did any of you gentlemen, like, because I know one of the main complaints I always hear about today is the wrestlers not traveling together, and you know, pretty much everyone goes on their flight, then goes to their private car, then goes to their hotel room, goes to the arena, goes to the gym, blah blah blah. How important was it, like, traveling together with other wrestlers? And did any of you gentlemen have your group that you traveled with during your wrestling days? I was just wondering.
Well, I was lucky on that part, too, because Bobby Fields, Lee's brother, we wound up as tag team partners, and him and I rode the roads together ourselves, you know. We didn't have a carload like some of them talk about. Lee was real particular about heels and baby faces riding together in cars and staying in the same motels and stuff like that. And I mean, I we know what happened, but if they got caught, they was through. So we had our own group, you know. Bobby and I, and Don, his brother, and Lee, we traveled together all the time, and I don't know how anybody else did it, but we just split the when we go in a car, he'd drive 1 week and I'd drive the next week, and a lot of times it depended on where we was at and what was going on, how much money we was making. We most of the time stayed in the same room together. So we did that for years, you know. I'm talking about several years.
Now, did you feel that driving together with other wrestlers, did you feel that it improved you, especially from, you know, I know you mentioned that you didn't talk much. Do you feel like it could have improved your ability in the ring, though?
Well, the only thing it did, we talk wrestling all the time, and we talked about the finishes and the programs and stuff that we could do, and of course you talk about something long enough and you maybe argue about it, but when the argument comes out, you usually got a pretty good idea of what you need to do. And both of us, you know, him me being the booker and him being top babyface too. We hammered out a lot of stuff on the road, and we never had any scripts, and we didn't have any. Only book we had was a booking book, and if you lose it, the way we had the book, they couldn't tell what the hell was going on. We never had any finishes wrote down. We didn't have none of that stuff. It was all, if you couldn't remember it, you were just in trouble.
As they say. Your SOL, or up a creek, if you watch.
Yeah. If you couldn't remember things, that's kind of like they are today. But they're more today. than they were then. Back then, if you screwed up something, you could cover it up and go on and do something else and use your own judgment and get it over. But nowadays, the way they got their script, I think when they screw something up, it's screwed up pretty good.
Well, you can tell that when they go back and do it two or three different times.
Yeah. You know, I've always said, you know, they say, well, is there anything in the business that you would like to have done that you never got to do? And I said, it couldn't happen. But what I'd like to do in today's group is go in the dressing room, and say, hey, you and you on first, and I need about 20 minutes, and I need the baby face over, and just walk out and see what the hell they do.
Nowadays would be a main event.
Bob, you used to tell me that all the time.
Yeah, it's
now,
all together.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just wondering, you know, did anybody else here on, well, let me get the business out of the way. You're listening to Heartbeat Radio without Bruce Hart here on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Patrick Ketza, and like I said, Bruce isn't here, and I'm not sure why. But joining me is Bob Kelly, Merv Unger, Bill White, Tom Andrews, and Bob Brooks, who I do want to kind of thank as taking over as kind of the pseudo guest host. Like I said, I unfortunately was not very well prepared for tonight. But that makes the best host. Usually does, shooting from the hip, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
Now, obviously, you know, it's nowhere near what it was now, but what was it like, because this was something that was mentioned, you know, with getting out of one territory and happening to get lucky and get into another territory at roughly the same time, was there ever a problem with, like, moving from territory to territory? Did it ever become too tough for any of you gentlemen?
Yeah. I can vouch for that. I left Tennessee and went out to California, and I lived in Modesto in California. And when I was there, I wanted to continue on wrestling, and so I picked up the phone and I called Roy Shires, and I said, Roy, I'd like to introduce myself. I'd like to come up and show you what I have to offer. And he said, my town is filled up right now. I don't meet anybody. So about a month went by, and I called him back. And I was watching Sacramento TV, and I sure would like to
Hello.
Get a shot at letting you see what I have to offer. And he said, well, you can come on up if you want to. He said, I can't guarantee you get on the TV. And so I went up to Sacramento TV, and he put me in there with Ray Stevens. And Ray took care of me, and from that point on, I was okay with Roy Shires. But until that time, it was hard to even get into that territory. You didn't want to get
the Ray.
You say that Roy Shires is one of the better playoff men that I thought of, and some of the top workers in the world would come through there.
Real quick, if I could interrupt, the host of the show has arrived finally. I'd like to introduce Bruce Hart.
Yeah, it was my apologies. I was given time to call at 8. My time, but it sounds like somebody maybe got their signals crossed, maybe our PR guy or something, but I apologize. We've had a real good time
tonight, Bruce. I don't know if you know this, but we have Bob Kelly, Merv Unger, Bill White, Tom Andrews, and Bob Brooks all joining you in case you want to get involved in the conversation.
Some of my friends and colleagues here, those are all names that are near and dear to me, so I appreciate their participation, you know. And, I saw Tom a few years back at Cauliflower Alley, you know, it's, way back when I was sort of a young upstart, and Tom was up here with Jungle Jim Starr and Sandy Barr and Cowboy Bruce Kirk and some of those guys, you know, and they did a great job for my dad, and I had a chance to see Tom a few times subsequent to Cauliflower Alleys and stuff, and always one of the guys that everyone speaks well of, you know, no matter what territory he was ever in. He was always, you know, considered, you know, a very upstanding and a great worker, you know, but everyone always had nothing but good things to say about him, and so I'm really delighted that he saw fit to come on. And
I remember when Tom came into Calgary, the first year he was under the hood, and then the second year he came out as himself, and I doubt if anybody ever figured it out.
No, myself included. I was just around the periphery then, but and Stu never let us go into the dressing rooms or any of that stuff back then. You know, we were always sort of, trying to figure out what was going on, you know, and I think we had some, you know, suspicions about the veracity of everything, but Stu did a pretty good job of keeping us in the dark. I remember more than a few times my dad coming home after some of these wild encounters with Archie or some of those guys, and I was thinking, you know, how come Stu's got these guys working for him when they're beating the crap out of him and all this other, you know, I wasn't quite sure about you know, how real or whatever, you know. So, but yeah, but I remember with great fondness, Tom and his colleagues, you know, they did a great job for us back in late 60s, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere in that era, you know, and then they all went on to have a lot of success in a number of different territories in the States after that. You know, they're all, I remember always hearing the name and always saying, wow, I knew those guys, you know, so that's cool.
Anybody has some stories, by all means.
Those were awful kind words you said about me. they're probably all lies, but anyway, I appreciate the compliment.
I mean them too, you know. As I said, I was glad I had a chance to see you at Cauliflower Alley before the infamous Carl Lauer, kind of ostracized me or something for speaking the truth down there or something like that about 10 years ago, you know. But yeah, it's, and how's everything been going, Tom?
Everything is going fine. I'm just getting old and decrepit, you know, and nobody recognizes me anymore because I've shrunk so much. But, that's another funny story. Leo Burke was out a few years ago out to the CAC, and I hadn't checked in yet. I didn't have a name tag, and I was walking through the casino, and all of a sudden he turned around and he says, "You're Tom Andrews, aren't you?" And I says, "Yeah." And he said, "Do you know how I recognize you?" And I said, "No." He says, "Your voice." And I hadn't seen him since the 60s.
Well, yeah, he was raw rookie back around that time, you know, if I'm not mistaken. I remember Leo first came in for my dad, and he's pretty skinny, and he was wearing a mask as well as the Batman or something like that. And then he kind of became Leo Burke, and then he turned out to be a pretty good worker, as you might recall, too, Leo. He had, became a really top-notch baby face, you know, and he actually had a lot to do with getting my brother Brett launched. You know, he was kind of one of the guys that worked with Brett a lot when Brett was just getting his feet wet, and he really instilled a lot of good working values in him. So, but yeah, that's funny. I remember Leo and those guys all spoke very well of you, though. You know, they back in those days, they would be dropping your name like they knew you, and you know, you guys were sort of guys who had gone on to stardom in the States. And I remember Leo and a lot of those guys, you know, talking about Tom Andrews and Cowboy Bruce Kirk and all those guys, you know. So, as I said before, I used to hear a lot of gossip, a lot of stuff, but I never, and I'd hear a lot of guys knocking other guys, but I never heard anyone ever say anything bad about you or your colleagues. It was always compliments and accolades, you know. So, you know, that always made an impression on me, you know. I was pretty young then, but I remember you always treated, you know, the snot-nosed heart punks well. You're always pretty nice to us, put up with us. I'm sure Stu always had these sayings about, you know, we should be seen and not heard, and don't open your mouth amongst the wrestlers and all. So we were always pretty circumspect, but I remember you were always sort of like a big brother, an old uncle or something to us. You always treated us pretty well and told Stu to go easy on us and all that kind of stuff.
That's kind of you to say, you know. Like I say, they're probably all lies, but it was nice of you to hear that, to hear that.
Yeah, yeah. And, there was enough, you know, kind of pranksters and whatever else around that time. So I'm sure you remember. So I think that was the year of the Mabel parties and all that kind of stuff. So there was always a fair bit of stuff going on the side, and I can't remember if some of those card-carrying degenerates like Don Fargo and some of them were they were in and around maybe around that time. I can't remember if the Christies were up here, Jerry Christie and some of those guys, but I remember always hearing afterwards about the you know, some of the ribs and the mischief and the stuff on the road. You know, I was always half intrigued, you know, with, you know, I'd hear these names like Dr. Jerry Graham and Don Fargo and, you know, the Christies, and there's a few others that, you know, are sort of, you know, legendary in wrestling annals for nothing they did in the ring, you know. but yeah, I'm sure you might remember some of those bad actors or whatever you want to call them, you know. So, but
fellas, when you talk about pranks, there's one that I have never forgotten over the years, and I'm waiting to get back to CAC when I see Tom. He taught me that very famous neck exercise so you can build up your neck.
Which one was that? Hanging yourself or something?
I was pretty close to that. He would grab you by the back of your from the front and move your head forward and tell you to push back really hard. And of course, you're against a wall, and then he'd let go.
Oh, yeah.
He would see stars.
Yeah, you're starstruck, which is something some of our peers are, you know, without having done that exercise, but. Yeah, I remember hearing of that exercise. You know, I'm not sure if I ever incurred that or not. You know, I'm sure I was considered a headbanger. It's not for that reason, you know. But
yeah, but yours was in a different way.
Yeah. are any of those other guys still kicking around, Tom? I kind of often wondered what I think I saw Jungle Jim when I was down there when I last saw you. Is he still kicking around down there?
Yeah, he lives in Bossier City, Louisiana, but he's kind of he's distanced himself from the business and the old timers. He's not happy with the business, and he's kind of a recluse now.
Oh, that's, I guess, good or bad, you know. If, you know, and is Frank Monty or Cowboy Bruce still kicking around?
I have no idea. I haven't heard from him for years.
Yeah, some of them, I almost feel like an idiot asking, because sometimes, oh no, he died 10 years ago or something like that, you know. But I remember hearing his name for, you know, we'd get guys coming up from, California, and they'd talk about him being, he had long since abandoned the Bruce Kirk thing and was, you know, doing some other persona and stuff. But I had sort of lost track, and I wasn't even sure if Sandy Barr was, if he was still alive, or, you know, I kind of...
Sandy Barr died years ago.
So I had sort of, I don't go online or any of that stuff that often, so I don't even, it's kind of, that's one of the nice things, I guess, about CAC is you at least get a chance to, see some of these people, you know, that are, that used to be in the business, you know, and you kind of catch up with them a bit, you know, but... When did you stop working, Tom?
Oh, about 1981.
81, and he went out on your terms?
Yes. Well, I kind of messed up my elbow, and I had an operation on it, and they said it was pretty bad. I let it go for a couple of years, and it got staph infection in it, and it was filling up with blood, not just water. And after it healed, I got on the bench to start lifting weights, and I started out real light. I probably had about 80 pounds, and I got about halfway up with a bench press, and something popped in my elbow, and that was it. I said, I've got to hang them up. So.
Oh, that's too bad. Is it you're relatively okay now? Like, that's not a...
Oh.
Plaguing you still, or is it kind of?
Well, I still get around. You know, all my joints are eating out. I developed that joint disease, osteoarthritis, and rheumatoid.
Oh, yeah.
And I've lost 3.5, almost 4 inches in height. You know, just
wow.
From everything gone. So.
Well, I know Leo was probably like that, as you probably noticed when you saw him at CAC. Or he had his knees had pretty much gone, you know. So he was sort of like Ox Baker, you know. And I'm not sure if old Ox was up here when you were up here, but I saw Ox at CAC or whatever, and he used to be about 6'5". He's about like 5'10" or something. Hey, Ox. Yeah. He was like... He looked like he was extremely bow-legged, you know, I think. But, yeah, Leo was kind of, you know, about that point, you know, he was kind of resembling Cowboy Lang or something like that, you know. So, but, I know my dad had, you know, he had messed his knee up in the latter part of his life, oddly enough, doing some, they had him down in... Atlanta, and Garrick Bischoff, who wasn't too swift. They had Stu doing some entrance for Hall of Fame thing down there, and they had him in the dark climbing up some rickety little ladder, and and one of the steps gave way or something, and Stu completely snapped his quadricep and went all the way up from his knee to his hip, and then he went in for surgery. He was too stubborn to do physio and all, so by the last seven, eight years of his life, he had to walk like backwards when he's going up downstairs and upstairs and stuff because he couldn't do it normally. And it was kind of, he was kind of hunched over all the time. It took a toll on him, you know, unfortunately. So.
Yeah, I saw him the last year he came to CAC, and I could tell he was crippled up pretty bad.
Yeah, that was one of the main things. And he had all the other, unfortunately, a lot of stuff happening that was last few years that really kind of added to it, you know, with just the Owen thing and some of the other things that were pretty decimating, you know. So, but that was one of the things Stu did get a lot of enjoyment out of, though, was just seeing all you guys down at like CAC. That was kind of like his big, the one thing he, you know, meant a hell of a lot to him, just to be able to see guys like you and some of those other old Angelo Savoldis and some of those other old cronies of his that he had so much affection for, you know. So, but where do you live these days, Tom?
I'm in a little town called, well, I don't live in town, I live in the country, but it's Lawson, Missouri.
Oh, yeah. You anywhere near Old Harley or?
I don't do much farming anymore. It's a little tough for me to keep up with the property, but I do it. I manage, and I don't raise any animals anymore. I just I have a dog, and that's it.
Oh, what kind of animals were you raising? You doing cattle or
I
horses?
I had cattle. I had hogs. Chickens, guinea hens. I had a goat.
You must have been inspired by Stu, because I remember you probably remember when you were up at Stu's back in the day. All those were part of the landscape up there, the goats and the chickens and the cows and the horses and the wrestling bears and a few other, you know. And I think that was all part of the landscape up there. We were sort of like the Beverly Hillbillies up there in the cities, you know. And I think the neighbors thought we were like a warped cross between the Addams Family and the Beverly Hillbillies, you know. You know, all the farm animals, and then you had dwarfs and bald-headed lady wrestlers and all these other curiosities, you know. Nobody was quite sure what the hell was going on up there. But
I remember your dad had a resort, a lake out there. We went up there and picnicked a few times.
Yeah, Clearwater Beach. I remember he had us working out there as low paid. I think we didn't get paid at all. I remember a few times I had a brother Dean who was always promoting rock concerts out there, and Stu came out there a few times, and I think there was all kinds of marijuana and stuff, you know, in the air, and Stu would be going ballistic. He wasn't too thrilled with hippies and, you know, any of that kind of stuff. And he was like up in arms, you know, and the smell of marijuana was akin to maybe heroin to him. So he was like not too thrilled.
Now, listen, it's good to talk to all of you, and I'm going to have to sign off here. My battery's about dead.
Well, great talking to you, Tom. I appreciate you coming on, and I'd love to have you back on another time. You know, I apologize for arriving late today. You know, I had, but I'd be delighted if you run into any of those other guys, like Jungle Jim or any of those other guys. I'd love to maybe get some of them on with you next time and just commiserate or hear some of the road stories, you know, from straight from the horse's mouth.
I'll do what I can to try and locate a few of them, okay?
Yeah, I appreciate that, Tom, and thanks very much. I always appreciate you're always treated the heart brats well back in the day. You're always a gentleman, and you know, I appreciate the cutting us some slack when we were, you know, tormenting you guys. So thanks very much.
All right, hey, good talking to you, and I'll see you at CAC.
Thanks very much, Tom. All the very best, and take care. Good luck to you.
Good night. Have a nice day. Look forward to seeing you next April.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. And who else do we have on here now, Marv? I feel like I'm embarrassed to ask because I don't even know who's on here.
If you like me to, you have obviously Merv Unger. You have Merv Unger. You have Bill White. You have Bob Brooks with you, and then we also have Mr. Bob Kelly. But I know he's mostly listening in because of some recent medical issues that he's undergoing. So obviously,
I'm still hanging on there.
Oh, that's cool. I appreciate you guys coming on, and what was some of the things you guys were reflecting on or discussing before? I wouldn't mind picking up some of the loose ends here.
Well, we were just kind of scuttlebutting, talking about everything. Nothing really in particular, but it's just, you know, it's nice to be on here with you guys, and I met you at, never got to work with any of the Harts, but I met all of you through the CAC, and as far as I've heard, you know, y'all a first class act, and I'm just, you know, some of the things that I missed out of life, I guess that was one of them, getting to go in that dungeon. That's right.
Oh,
probably
yeah,
lucky.
Yeah, it was kind of like one of those obligatory, you know, rites of passage, you know.
Yeah,
and,
I've heard a lot about it, but I never was there. But I've worked at a lot of boards. It was, it's one of them things that I just tell them a while ago. I said just because I never went in a dungeon, don't mean I didn't get my nose rubbed in the mat a few times and by different ones.
Oh, yeah, it's kind of like the obligatory three-headed dog at the gates of hell, you know. Tell me a bit, Bob, what places did you work?
I started out in Louisville, Kentucky, and I made my first road trip to North Bay with Larry Kazabowski and Bobby Hart.
Back North Bay and
Bobby Hart. I met George Jr., who was starting out and was up there, and Matt Gilmore, Rick Rosentanny, and the Garvins.
Those are I probably knew a lot of the Hamilton guys, and I surmise if you knew old Vic Rosentanny or Bull Johnson and Stephen Little Bear and those guys around those days too.
Vic Rosentanny and Matt Gilmore was the hangman up there, and they had a lot of heat, and they'd done a good job. And Matt, for some reason or another, kind of took a liking to me, and I was refereeing most of the time, but he would come and work out with me, and before the matches. Sometimes he'd get Larry to book me in a match with him at the opening match, and he'd come back and work the main event, and I'd referee the rest of it. So he was quite a help to me in the business. And then I went from there to Mobile, Alabama, and got with Lee Fields.
Lee Fields, and that was not a bad little gig back.
I stayed here my whole career.
Used to be a good little. We had a few guys come up from Alabama, you know, Mobile and those places.
Yeah.
I remember even old Dickie Steinborn came up here. I'm not sure if you knew him or.
Yeah, I know Dick. I knew a lot of guys. We had a lot of talent, coming through Mobile, and it was.
I remember back in the day, I'm not sure if you're around in that time, but old Hulk was. He wrote us back. Would have been around 1980. Hulk Hogan, 79, somewhere in there. He and Bruce
I think his name was Terry
Boulder.
My dad always had a bit of a fascination with these big muscle guys Billy Graham and Hogan.
Yeah, he was
Kirk.
After me. I was just about done when he was getting started. And
because
I was down here, and I started out and actually 59 in wrestling and was down here in Mobile in 65 and Dunleavy's booking for him for 10 years and just had a good run and done a lot of stuff and
that was one of those kind of hot territories back in the 60s from what my dad used to tell me. My dad was always kind of, talking about Mobile and then on and off about Nick Gulas and some of that stuff, and then Crockett's Place.
I guess we probably put, some of the stuff that they're doing now, we was doing it then in a different way, but one of the biggest houses that we ever drew was with Chris Colt, the Hell's Angel, and I put my horse up against his motorcycle in a match, he drove his motorcycle in the arena, and I rode my horse in there, and it packed that place, and it was a lot of fun. I truly enjoyed the wrestling business. From the first time I went to a match with my mom until today, I still enjoy talking.
Bob, if I can ask a question of you, Bob, back when you're talking about into the 60s and 70s, did you work for Ann Gunkel at all or Tom Ernesto when he was booking for?
Well, I switched boys with Tom Ernesto, and Louis Tillette and. I'd call him up and we'd switch talent back and forth and with him and Grizzly Smith I'd swap with them
right.
And Leroy McGurk.
Yeah, those are some legendary names. I remember when I was just breaking in back in the day and I remember those names, Tom Ernesto.
He was one of the great
minds in the business
back in
the day, and
I got to work with Bobby Shane and Bobby Shane was probably one of the best minds in the business.
Those are iconic names,
Bobby Shane came in here and talked to me first time I ever met him, and he was coming through from Texas and going to Tampa, and he stopped in and talked to me and about a plan he had and see if I would be interested in working with him, and he wanted to switch from babyface to heel, and he never did heel before, and he wanted to switch and he wanted to try it out, and so. He told me what he had planned and how he was going to do it and how he wanted to do it. I had a deal cooked up for Fargo with Lee, and I had a deal between them two that we were going to work into, And then when I talked to Bobby Shane, I told Lee that Bobby would be better better at that deal than what Fargo would. So I talked to Bobby Shane and told him what I was figuring on doing. He said he'd love to try that. And so we put him in here, and he drew, packed the house. We drew over 10,000 in this little old Mobile, Alabama.
Well, yeah, that was some interesting people. You know, those names really piqued my memory. You know, I remember even Leroy was another guy that had kind of a legendary reputation. You know, just for what he did in Oklahoma with Danny Hodge and all those guys. You know, but
yeah,
those are
Danny Hodge.
Named.
We used him all the time here, and a name you don't hear anything about anymore. I don't know really what happened to him, but Ken Mantell, he was a junior heavyweight champion, and we did great money with him. And he
and
was
those guys were phenomenal workers, from what I've been told. You know, I used to hear so many good things about Ken Mantell or Al Madrill and Danny Hodge and Roger Kirby, you know. Yeah, those were
Hey,
Bruce, guys.
I got a good story, Danny Hodge story for you.
Oh, I'd love to hear it.
Okay. Paul Christie told me this. Paul Christie started off in Chicago, you know, back in 61, and he had been in the dressing room with Danny Hodge and some of the fellows, and you know, they always wanted Danny to, you know, do some feats of strength, and he broke a pair of pliers, which he did, I guess, quite often. But Paul Christie watched him in amazement. He said when he got done, he ran out of the locker room, jumped in his car, drove home, pulled in the garage. Now, here's, you know, Paul Christie, you know, bench pressing 350, 400 pounds, working out every day. He said he grabbed a pair of pliers. He said he put everything he had into trying to break them pliers and couldn't do it. But Danny Hodge, you could bring them. I mean, it wasn't a pair of pliers he brought. You could bring him a pair of pliers, and he snapped them pliers, you know. But, you know, I mean, he had big trapezius muscles, but my understanding was he had double-jointed fingers, wasn't it, or his wrist or something, Bruce, gave him that extra strength in his hands?
Yeah, I remember old Harley, who was always up to a little bit of mischief, told me that he tried to replace Danny Hodge's pliers with some heavy-duty whatever type. and he said Danny grunted and squinted a bit and then snapped them. And he,
wow.
And he kind of knew that Harley had perpetrated something, you know, but that's how strong he was. He apparently even broke the heavy-duty reinforced ones or something like that. You know, he didn't want to let Harley have the better of him, you know, type thing, you know. But yeah, he was, and he seemed like a very nice guy, Danny. I met him a few times at CAC, and, you know, couldn't have been more humble and down to earth, you know, not the least bit arrogant or, you know, aggressive or anything like that. You know, just seemed like a real down-to-earth guy, you know. You wouldn't even know that he was as deadly as he really was, you know. So.
Bob, could I ask you a question there about you're down in Mobile. Did you, and I know we had one of the greats tonight with Tom Andrews on from the Interns, but did you have the opportunity to work with J.C. Dykes and the Infernos or John Carson and the Grapplers when they were working in that Central States area?
Yeah, I worked with J.C. and who's the other guy you're talking about?
Don Carson and the
Grapplers.
Yeah,
Don Carson. Yeah. He was a regular in here, just about it, and drew some big money with him, and they were top notch workers. I mean, ain't no doubt about it. That's one reason why I felt like I was probably the luckiest person in the world, because of the talent that came through here, and everybody cooperated so good with me that it was unreal. I was talking about Ernesto and Grizzly Smith and people like that that was doing booking, I could call them up anytime and tell them I needed a couple of guys or I got a couple of guys I need you to book for me for a couple of 3 weeks and get them out of here, and then I'm going to bring them back. And I always got cooperation with those guys, and really, it was really neat. And you know, a lot of times bookers talk about the trouble that they had and with guys and stuff, and I never had any problem with anybody in all those. I booked for about 12 years for Lee, and I never had any problem with any of the boys at all, and they all respected Lee and respected us as a business, and they conducted themselves the way they're supposed to, and consequently we did real good down here, and a lot of guys came through here that, you know, people, they were on top everywhere, and they liked Pensacola Beach and Panama City, and they'd come down and spend 2 or 3 weeks and work with us and go back home and go do their thing. We did have a good territory down here that people really didn't get to know, because Lee was a kayfabe guy till he died. He didn't even smarten his own son up. I had to do that, wouldn't let the people that wrote those magazines in the building. He wouldn't let them in, and so consequently, we never got any advertisement through those Ring magazines that was out all over back in the 50s and 60s and 70s.
Yeah, I remember those. They never did much for us either, I might add. You know,
they covered the East Coast real well.
yeah, very rarely, every now and then, they'd mention some guy who maybe had worked down there, like Dr. Jerry Graham, when he was long since blackballed everywhere else, and they'd maybe mention that he was up working but very rarely, like I remember back in the day, once Stu had some pretty good guys up here, Billy Robinson and Stomper and Abdullah and even Stasiak, long before he had gone to WWE for his little cameo, but you never ever hear about them in any of those mags. And then after the fact, you know, I remember, you know, Ivan Koloff, and, you know, guys like that, and you never hear of them. And then later on, if they finally crack the roster down in New York or someplace, you know, they'd finally make mention of them. It was the same even in the 80s, you know, with them. We had some pretty good guys like Dynamite and all like that, and you never ever see them in Pro Wrestling Illustrated or Wrestling Review or whatever, but, you know, after they finally made the show or whatever, then all of a sudden they'd make out like they had discovered some new talent. But, yeah, that was just the way it was, I guess.
Greg Oliver hear that, though.
No, I had a lot of them coming along after the factories. If I had known you guys were that good, we would have been writing about you or something like that, you know, all that after-the-fact stuff.
Yeah, even Bill After, you know, it seemed, you know, he would give a lot of coverage to Billy Graham, you know, but not when he was in the AWA, you know. It was
when he was in,
like you said, right.
When he was
New York,
in Calgary as Wayne Coleman, you know, he was in Calgary long before that, or Mosca or Abby or Robinson. I think those guys were all up here at the same time, and you never ever read a thing about any of them before, you know. And later on, it was like Billy Graham, superstar, you know. I never ever read about Wayne Coleman or Archie the Stomper or any of those guys. You know, it's kind of funny, but.
You know, another guy that never got a lot of coverage, that I felt anyway, was King Kong Mosca, Angelo Mosca.
He had a fair bit of swagger and all that other, you know. He was up here as early as the mid-60s or somewhere in there. He used to come up when he was still playing for Hamilton, and he'd come in the off-season, you know, and Stu had a fair track record with these old football players as far back as Woody Strode and Kaniski and Wilbur Snyder and Joe Blanchard and those guys, you know, and then, yeah, even later he seemed to, with Billy Graham was a former Stampeder, and then later on guys like Pillman and George Wells and some of them, you know, but yeah, they were actually not bad candidates, you know, they seemed to develop into decent workers in most cases, you know, so, but yeah, those are some names I hadn't even thought of for a while, so those old football players, you know, and still a few of them kicking around, I guess, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to not take too much rust out of there at one time. I got to be gentle with you, bring up some of these old names, but, you know, it's great to talk about them, you know, it's just so enjoyable because, like I say, you know, these guys get forgotten about, and they never should be forgotten because of the, you know, the contribution that they brought to professional wrestling, and, you know, it's just...
yeah, most of them were, you know, I'm sure of Tom, who's not on the radio now, but I'm sure they'd agree that most of them were good guys, too, beyond everything else, you know, they're all pretty stand-up guys, you know.
While I got them on the phone, Bruce, I want to ask you, we're having our 25th, not this coming year, but next year, our 25th reunion here in Mobile, which is actually just especially for the boys. We don't have any wrestling fans coming, and invite you all to come down here and see how country folks eat.
I'd love to.
And they sure do eat good.
I'll mention that to my beloved brother Brett as well. You know, maybe get him down there for a. You know, I think it's been a long time since
I've
the last
this.
Time I got down there was I think my brother Owen pulled that rib on Harley. Harley, as you probably know, is a barbecue aficionado or something. And I guess Owen put about 4 bottles of red hot sauce or something in Harley's barbecue or something. And Harley, I was told he didn't want to put Owen over, and he was like eating this stuff. I said it was like steam coming out his ears and his nostrils. And I think finally had to admit that, you know, that Owen had, he was not too thrilled, I heard, you know. But yeah, I'd love to get down there and
yeah, we'd love to have you guys. And it, like I said, it's our 25th one. And it's strictly for the boys and
boys
fans. And
which guys are still down there? I'd love to. Is there any of the old legends still kicking around? Danny Davis?
Oh, yeah. Danny comes every single year.
Yeah, good guy, Danny. And is old Ted Allen down there still? Or?
Well, Ted Allen passed away.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, he passed away a couple of 3 years ago.
I didn't even know that. He was a good guy, old Ted. We had him
up
here.
Yeah, he was.
Is old Ken Wayne still kicking around?
Who?
Ken Wayne.
He's still kicking around. Yeah, him and Buddy Wayne too. His daddy. Yeah, they still kicking. There's a lot of Bob Roop's been coming. There's a lot of them that's passed away. Luthez come every year until he passed away. And
Old Ron Starr, has he ever make it down that way? I've wondered what became of him. He
was in real bad shape. I went to a legend show over in Dothan and saw him, and he couldn't hardly get around, and I haven't heard anything from him in a couple of years.
He worked up here quite a bit after he got blackballed in the States, and fantastic worker, old Ron. I felt bad for him because, you know, they kind of blackballed him because can't remember if he tried to sue Leroy because they wanted him to drop the junior heavyweight strap or some such thing. But ended up having a falling out with Leroy and Watts, and then he was a great worker over on. I wondered what had come of him. You know, he had been.
He worked in here quite a bit. You know, he worked for me quite a bit. And Danny Miller comes every year.
How is Dan? He's got to be getting on a bit.
Yeah,
he's doing
real good. Looks real good. And he comes every year. There's a bunch of them that come that I can't think of. But Bill White might be able to remember. My mind ain't what it used to be. And we have about 250, 300 people every year. And
old Adrian Street, does he get down there? I heard his health was not great either, too. But
who is that?
Adrian Street.
Yeah, he still comes. He comes every year,
he's
too.
He's down in Pensacola,
somebody
told me. I didn't know that was true or not.
Yeah,
but,
he lives in Pensacola.
Yeah, those are some, kind of iconic names from back in the day. You know, they're,
Fargo, he comes every year. And
how's old Don looking these days? He always kept in shape, old Don.
He still looks good. I mean, you know, still lives that gimmick. You know, he was probably the best ring general there ever was in the ring, to my opinion.
He was one of those characters too. You know, he was kind of like one of those old. Legendary old characters, you know. Used to hear my dad would always talk sort of reverently, and the Ted Christies and the Don Fargos and the Frankie Murdochs and Sky High.
Yeah,
Lee,
well, Murdoch, Dickie Murdoch, he was in here a lot, and remember Ito, the Japanese guy called Ito.
Yeah,
he
I
was in here
Kojo
a lot
too. I don't know whether he was in Tennessee or. Tojo Yamamoto and
We had
Len Rossi or Nick.
Len Rossi. Danny Little Bear.
Danny was another. He's another character, old Danny. And,
He was quite a guy.
Sweet Hansen and Rip Hawk. They must have been on that stretch for Johnny Weaver. Some of those guys. They were.
Yeah. Do you remember Tretch Phillips?
Oh, yeah, I remember old Tretch with all the tattoos and the...
Those old guys. Tretch. I mean, you know, he was on our board of directors until he passed away. But anyways, I'm getting a little wore out, and I got a little trouble breathing, and I just need to tell everybody I love you all, and it's so great to talk to you. And,
great talking to you. I appreciate your even coming on.
I hope I make it around here. I hope I make it to our 50th. I mean, our 25th. Our CAC is the 50th. It's coming up, and I'm pretty sure I'll make it that far. But anyways, I hope I do. The wrestling business, in my opinion, was the best in the world, and I enjoyed every minute of it. I had a few, you know, people in there that it's not exactly what they should be, but I never met a wrestler that I couldn't get along with. And when you go to a place and there's a wrestlers. In the room, they're gonna work together and finally be all together in one spot, and they just a camaraderie there that I don't know whether these young kids will ever get that far or not.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's really missing. You know, I don't want to digress, but I totally agree. I think that's one of the vital ingredients, you know, just that camaraderie or being on the road or, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where the guys really learned how to work, and they learned how to respect the business and respect each other, and they're all that kind of stuff's
that's right, that's right.
Almost been lost in the last decade or two, you know, and that's kind of the
sad situation. But anyways,
yeah.
You all take care of yourselves, and good night, and like I said, I love you all, and I'll see you on the road somewhere, hopefully.
I'll look forward to it. Thanks very much for coming on tonight. Been a pleasure.
Thank you.
See you soon, Bob.
Now, since we have a moment, I actually have a request from Bob, and that's the fact that I know, Bill, you've been with us. I haven't heard you chime in. I mean, do you have any stories of the 60s and 70s or anything that you want to ask Bruce at all?
If you're referring to me, I have to respect my elders.
I haven't lost your touch.
And your youngers.
Ain't that right, Bruce?
Yeah.
You always told me, ain't that what they always told me? Respect your elders?
Yeah, respect the old farts, yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Buddy, that's enough.
But, yeah.
I kind of agree with Bob. The 50s, 60s, and 70s was the prime time of wrestling. We protected it. We lived it. We had the camaraderie of each other. You know, we had the social life that nobody else in the world could give us, because we were in this territory or in that territory. We went from territory to territory, and you know, that was rough on the families.
Yeah, that was something that almost is, you know, kind of in this era, it's almost been overlooked. But yeah, I remember a lot of guys, you know, that was I guess just the part of the sacrifice you did for the business back in the day. But I remember guys would sometimes, they'd bring their family in lock, stock, and barrel up here, but quite often they'd leave them at home, you know. Either way was you know, it was tough, you know, pulling kids out of school and all like that, or having their dad come up here, you know, and he'd be, you know, calling home every night and all that. But yeah, it's almost something that sort of
back then they didn't have the cell phones they have today.
Oh no, the long distance calls
really cost me to call.
Oh yeah, I remember all that stuff. It's almost, now that you mention it, it's almost sort of one of those forgotten things. That was one thing. The wrestling business wasn't conducive to, you know, family life. I remember when we were real little kids, my dad had us bouncing around between Montana and up here and trailer parks, all that kind of stuff, you know. I remember more than a few. I remember Fritz von Erich when he was breaking in up here in the 50s, and he had a house trailer out in the yard with his kids and his wife, and I think there was a couple of others that, you know, were living in Stu's basement and stuff like that. You know, it's kind of funny how some of these iconic names later on, Buddy Roberts, I think, lived down in the dungeon, and Greg Valentine and some of those guys who were sleeping on the mat and all that stuff, you know, and it was just part of the, you know, the wrestling business back in those days, you know. So, but yeah, a lot of people almost have lost sight of that kind of thing, you know. So.
Yeah, I had the privilege of being one of the few people that got to work in every state of the union. I got to work up in Canada, but most of mine was in Toronto.
Yeah, I would say very few would have, you know, that's, when you consider places like Alaska and Hawaii and, you know, all of that, you know, it's, remarkable to have done every state. You know, it's a Guinness Book of World Records type stuff, I think.
Well, I learned a lot. I filled up a lot. And I can't complain. The wrestling business took care of me. It took care of me and my family. I got to raise 8 boys and 3 girls, 11 children.
Wow. I can relate.
Yeah, I know.
It's too bad, now that you mention that, it's unfortunate that, back in the day, the business, it's kind of a feast or famine these days, but back in the day, there was a lot more guys making a living and all of that, and nowadays, you're either in Vinny's territory or maybe TNA, I don't even know about that, but, if you're not there, you're... not being able to, make a living in this business, which is too damn bad. It's hopefully at some point that might change, if it's hard to say, but yeah, it's nice to hear from somebody that's, been down that road and kind of, they can, relate to the, what the business was, and it used to be a labor of love too. You had to really love the business to go through all that stuff, or go traveling and uprooting your family and all that stuff. A lot of people almost forget how much you sacrificed for the business back in the day. Most of the guys was kind of a passion or something they loved doing, it's kind of sad that type of thing's not around it, or nowhere near as much as it used to be,
Right. Well, the thing that I liked was the fact that while after I was traveling around a lot, from 1964 to the 70s, up in the 70s, I finally hooked up with Jim Crockett, and I stayed in the Crockett territory the rest, almost 20 years, and he would ship me out and send me off to different places, like Minneapolis. He sent me to Mid-South. He sent me to Frisco. He sent me to Korea. Sent me to Japan 3 times, so I can't, I can't complain, because every time he sent me out, he'd make sure that the promoter would take care of me.
Yeah, in those days, those were the elite territories, too, that you're talking about. Those were some of the best in the business. Carolina and Minneapolis and places like that were... guys were lighting up trying to get into those places back in the 70s and 80s. Those were the big money was, with guys like Ric Flair and Johnny Valentine and what Fern had going on, and Robinson and Billy Graham and Crusher and Bruiser and guys like that. Those were places that everyone was aspiring to get into,
I had the privilege of working with all of them. That was my big thing, and I enjoyed working with them.
Yeah, those would have been great times to be in. In those places, I imagine everyone respected the business. If you were in those territories, you're probably pretty grateful and respectful of the business to be. Able to work in those places, and that was a big feather in your hat back in the day if you could even claim to be working Minneapolis or Carolina or some of those territories. Those were the creme de la creme, as they say.
Yeah.
Hey, Bill, you worked Sailor Art Thomas. You had a match against them, didn't you?
Yeah, I
wrestled
Sailor Art.
Good guy, old Sailor Art.
Real gentleman from all standpoints, I think.
Yeah, he worked up Calgary in the 60s. That was maybe just a bit before my time, but I always heard very good things about Sailor Art, just as far as, you know, a real nice guy and,
Yes, he was.
Real gentleman type thing, you know, so.
And a real powerhouse.
You know who was like?
Yeah.
You know who was like that when he broke in was Tony Atlas.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I think the only one of those guys who gave.
You can't tell me enough about Tom Leo.
I think the antithesis of that was the Magnificent. Are some of those guys still around anymore? Tony's still around, isn't he?
Tony's up in Massachusetts. And Don Leo has passed away.
I didn't know that. A real gentleman, old Don Leo. Sailor Art, he's no longer around, is he?
No, Art passed away. He was from Madison, Wisconsin, and, he passed away. But, funny thing, too, the funny story about Art Thomas was he was a powerful guy, big, nice guy, gentleman, all that. He couldn't drive a car. His wife drove him everywhere he went. All his matches, his wife drove the car. Art was just, yeah, he was, Paul Christie told me stories about him, and he just could not get the technique of driving a car, and so he didn't drive. Yeah, so his wife drove him everywhere. So a little interesting tidbit there. But
unfortunately, gentlemen, unfortunately, we're running a little short on time. So unfortunately, I kind of have to wrap up the show. So real quick to. Mr. Merv Unger, I want to thank you for being on the show, and I want to know if you have any final words before, unfortunately, we must let you go.
No, it's always great to sit here, and, you know, you could listen for 2 hours and be totally entertained, but to be able to add things once in a while and to hear all the names of the people that... I used to know and have lost touch with. It really is nice to listen to all these guys who worked with them, because I worked with many of them myself. So it's a pleasure to have been here. So thanks a lot, guys. Have a good time.
Thank you, Marvin. Love to have you back again anytime. Hello?
All right, and I think he unfortunately had to leave. And Mr. Bob Brooks, any final words for yourself before we let you go?
Well, I want to thank you for having me on the show. And Bruce, I will give you a call. I was just waiting for the holiday to get over, and I will give you a call here this week. But it's just great to talk about all the stars, and what an opportunity to talk, of course, with Tom Andrews and all the great, we talked about all the great masked stars of the past, and look forward to being on the show again if you'll have me, and love to talk about the days of old.
Appreciate it, and I'd love to have you back anytime. Standing invitation, so I'll look forward to talking to you, Bob, and you have a great long weekend here.
All right, my friend, thank you, and thank you, Patrick, for being out there. And Bill White, I missed you this year, but I'll see you again at the next CAC.
Got it, Bob.
Okay, buddy.
Make sure you put your cribbage board.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you to Bob Brooks. And then to Mr. Bill White, do you have any final words as well as we wrap up here?
The only thing I got to say is it's been a privilege being able to talk to you guys, listening to Tom and the rest of them and Cowboy. And the only thing I got to say is everybody out there that's here that can hear me, please say a prayer for him. He needs it desperately, and we need God's help to get him through it.
Ditto, and I nice of you to say that, too.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you very much to Mr. White. Bruce, any final words, even though you were only here for the second hour?
Yeah, I appreciate all these guys for coming on. I always am fascinated and enthralled with their stories, you know, and appreciate their passion. And I'd like to thank you as well for doing a awesome job kicking ass on the moderating this. So I appreciate that as well. And I just like to thank all the listeners out there for your support and your input and all that. So I'm looking forward to next week. And in the meantime and in between time, you guys all take care and God bless.
All right. Well, thank you very much. As once again, next week we'll have a kind of a double-sided show. The first hour we're going to be talking about the Waterloo, Iowa Hall of Fame, and then I know the second hour we'll have Cubal Carmichael on, and we're going to be talking about that huge seminar that you'll be involved with coming up in August. Obviously, so we're definitely going to have a very good show. So once again, thank you very much, Bruce, and until next week, you've been listening to Heartbeat Radio with Bruce Hart here on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio.
Another edition of the Stampede Wrestling Show.